project in Limud in terms of learning Chasidus. We tried to do a little bit different than a little bit in the past, like 10 years ago. But we're going to really try to learn through the Sigdus properly, to learn through it from the beginning, from the Gemara, from the Mishnayim, through the Poskim, to highlight for us both issues in terms of the Lumbus of the Sigdus as well as pretty heavy emphasis.
I guess so.
Same recording?
Yes.
We have heavy emphasis on some very, very much lamaisim applications. We'll start with the first of the sugyas, the first page of the Kamos. It's strange, just the way the Sefer Zvida set up the structure is very strange, because almost for the first 57 blot, there's not that much, a little bit here and there, but not the focus of the Sefer is not even so much on the Issa Nida. The focus is more on Tumas Nida, and many of the other Tumas Tara related sugyas. Of course, that ultimately serves as the background for the Issa Nida. But the first of the sugyas that becomes most relevant for that discussion is the sugya that begins in the Zion and Beis and Masechus Nida, the very first in Ramah Kodesh. So, Amar Shmuel, Vodgar Karka Oilam, Yoshua Leha. If a woman checks the ground underneath her, and she sits down on the ground. The reason why she checked the ground is this proves to us beyond a shadow of a doubt there's no blood there before you. So we don't have much of a question when the next day becomes a matzah damalem. All of a sudden we find there's blood on the ground. Again, we're talking about she's obviously dressed and not dressed in a way that any blood that's going to come from her body is going to end up on the ground. So we could say with absolute certainty that this blood comes from her. So she was blood kakar oilam, she sat on the ground, and she finds blood there, tahira. Comes Shmuel with a very striking statement that she's Torah, and that our purpose is whatever we say Torah, that's just about the same as the Teres. Usually, Chazal use the phrase of Tamei and Torah because, again, a good chunk of the Masech is dealing with Tumas Nida, but Lamaisa, whatever, well, this may not be an absolute statement, but for our purposes, we're going to equate them. Whenever she is Tamei, she is Asura, whenever she's Tahora, she is Mutaris. During the course of the next couple of sugars, we may see some exceptions to that rule, but for right now, that statement is true that since the woman is Tahora, in the middle she's Mutaris. How do you know that that's the case? What's the source of this strange bit of Shmuel that even though we know 100% certain that the blood is coming from her body, why is she Tahora? She Nemar, the Besara at Shetagish Besara. Because she is missing the first component of Hilchos Nida, what we call Hagosha, because that's the name of our first Sugya. Hagosha means that she has some kind of a Hagish, some kind of a physical sensation that the blood is coming out. In the absence of such a physical sensation, so she's not Asura, she's not Tameya, that's a Dimin HaTorah, Shmuel derives from Sukkim. It says, B'Vsara, the Teshuvah tells us, Achetagish B'Vsara. So comes the Gemara questions, is that really true? Is that really the Din? That Din that you require Hagosha is based on the Pasuk B'Vsara, but we have other drushes, other libudim, other dinim that are learned out from that very same word, which of course throws into question, can we use the same word for multiple drushes? So we ask the Gemara, Hai b'psar revayalai, shem etam b'fdim kibachotz. The very word b'psar gives us another din, which we'll see as the sugyas develop, whether this is related, unrelated din, that at what point precisely does a woman become asur as anita? So certain people become tamei when something leaves their body. Sometimes they only become tummy when it literally exits their body entirely. And here, Nida is an exception to the rule. The woman becomes a Nida even though the blood is still internal. It means the blood has left the inner part and gone to another part of her body, what we call leaving, exiting the Bayis HaPnimi and going to the Bayis HaChitza. That's what's called the Tavu B'Fim Kibachutz. What that practically means is as follows, that a woman technically becomes a Nida D'Araisa even before the blood mamish leaves the body. Once the blood leaves the inner compartment, which right now we're going to translate that inner part of the body as the uterus, as we go on, both in terms of the halach and the medicine, as the sugars develop, we may fine tune that a little bit. But once the blood exits we call it today the uterus, so she already is considered to be a nida. Now, that could already raise a potential a serious problem. She could potentially be a nida without quite knowing that she's a nida. So that's going to become a whole sugya in of itself. We'll get to that also as we go on. So it comes to the mind and says, that din, that a woman becomes a nida, even though the blood is still inside, that's also derived from the phrase bibisara. So how can you learn two din from the same spot? That's the first question we go on. So the one in Shmuel tells us that the bibisara teaches us that you require hagosha, without hagosha, so that she's not a nida min haTorah. On the other hand, you have the same pasuk that teaches me the din of mitabafim kibachutz. So it comes to the mind and says, no, imkein leim akwa bibosar. my bibsora, shmabinot shetagish bibsora. Drosha, that the extra hay teaches us the extra din. So the Gemara is still relentless, miskati bivayle, but we still need the pasuk to teach bibsora v'lo b'shvia v'lo b'chaticha, that the only time the wound becomes an ida is if the blood goes out through her basar, presumably that the blood is touching the walls of her body. What if the blood comes out through some other way? It comes out as part of a piece of flesh that perhaps is related to a very early on a pregnancy. What if it comes out inside some other piece of meat that comes out? So that the word b'msara teaches us that she's not considered to be an ida. So we have too many dinim. Only one pasuk, too many dinim. But says no. Type ishmaminah. It's all learned out. Everything. You work out the dictionary. You work out the drush. It's all the same. All these dinim are all learned out from the same phrase b'msara. It's ad kan divrei. So there are two major points when you look at this Gemara that immediately strike us. First of all, we have multiple dinim that seem to be all learned out from the same nuance, very, very limited word, b'msara, teaching us almost three different points in Ilchos Nida. One is the din of Hargosha, that the physical sensation is critical for it to become a din of Deraisa. Number two, that the point of Tuma is a really early on point, is before the blood actually exits physically. And three, this other halacha, that the blood has to come out and it can't be almost masked, can't be inside some other entity. So in terms of lamdas, whenever you see a sugya like this, we have almost one pasuk, almost one drasha, and you have 15 different halachas. You have to stop and ask yourself a logical question. Are these halachas related to one another? Is there some kind of a common thread, some kind of a common theme that's connecting all these different halachas? Or they're just totally coincidence. They have mamish nothing to do with each other. There's one din of Hargosha learned out from this pasuk. There's another din of the Tav of Tinti B'chutz learned out from another letter. And there's another din of the Lobo Mishpil, the B'chaticha learned out from a third, something or other. But these are really three different halachas. As the sugyas develop a little bit, we're going to keep on coming back to this point. So you have not any high court conclusions right now. But just keep this in the back of your mind. Just.
What was the first one that was?
So the first din is Hargosha, that you need a sensation. The second din is that she becomes a nida, even though the blood didn't physically totally exit her body. And the third thing is that the blood cannot be inside some other kind of a piece of flesh or something. These three halachas may have absolutely nothing to do with each other. They're all three independently true. But there may be certain connections and correlations between these three halachas. So this is going to become a major, major question as the different sugyas develop. But that's not what we're going to talk about right now. What we want to talk about right now is the first of these halachas, which is really the ABCs of Ilchos Nida, the requirement of Hargosha. The Gemara just told us a tremendous chiddush, that mid the araisa, she's not a nida until she has some kind of a physical sensation. I emphasize the word araisa, because mid the rabbana things are going to change fairly quickly, but for today we're still in the world of the araisas. So what does this mean? What in the world does this term mean? The term of Hargosha. It's so fundamental, so elementary to Ilchos Nida, that its existence creates nida de araisa, and its absence spells at worst nida de rabbana. What in the world does the term mean? How would you even define what Hargosha means? We're going to analyze the term Hargosha on two different levels. We're going to analyze it first in terms of, through the eyes of the Rishonim, what exactly the halachic definition of Hargosha is through certain halachic parameters. And then afterwards, we're going to ask other people what Hargosha means. Namely, we're going to get a sense from the women, what exactly these halachic terminology, what this corresponds to in terms of El Hazeh. So we're going to try to put together those two pieces of information to try to define properly what Hargosha is all about. So the Rambam, in the second of the Maimonides, begins to describe the Hargosha in the context of a very, very specific aspect of Ilchos Nida, which hopefully we'll come back to a little bit later. It's an important shadow of Ilchos Nida. We'll take a look at the second of the Maimonides. So the Rambam in Ilchos Yisuribiya, Barakeh Loch Yedzayin. So the Rambam writes, Isha Sheishtina Mayim, if a woman is urinating, she's going to the bathroom, v'yotzadam imei raglayim. All of a sudden, she gets up and she notices that together with the urine, there's also blood. That is a fairly common chat that happens. And it's based on a complicated sugya maseches nida. So the Rambam takes the following view. Bein sheishtina v'yomedes, bein sheishtina v'yoshedes, harezo tahora. It doesn't matter what position physically she was when she was going to the bathroom. She is always considered to be tahora. The reason why the Rambam makes mention of that is because the Gemara in Maseches Nida quotes in Tanoim, who suggests that maybe physically, I'm not holding at all in the physical part of this sugya, but there are some Tanoim who suggest that maybe nuanced differences depending on how the woman was positioned when she was going to the bathroom, whether it's more likely that the blood is coming from the uterus, which is always, of course, a if they're thinking for us in the chuznida, or maybe the blood is coming from some other part of the body which would potentially be better for us in the chuznida. So the Rambam takes the view, like that Tana, doesn't make it, everything is okay. Rafilu hirgish gufa v'nizdaza, even if the following happened, this is the part that's relevant for us, even if the woman felt something, so the Rambam clearly has his eyes on nida dafkan zayin, even if she had her gosha, hirgish gufa, and the Rambam tells you, what is that hirgish gufa? V'nizdaza of. One thing, for the kumbel of zami menu. It's the shake, the tremble or something. That's, it's like in the, it says, the Gemara says that by Har Sinai, it's a class of the Ema, the Yura, the Reses, and depending whether you know how to pronounce the next word properly or not. So sometimes in the Shivas they say, the Reses of Zeya, they were sweating. No, it's the Zia. Zia means they were trembling at Har Sinai. Maybe they were hot at Har Sinai also, but sweating also. There's no mitzvah when you learn to sweat. The mitzvah is to tremble, the Zeya, the Zia. So the Rambam says that even if the woman had experiences at Rosh Hashanah, i.e., she is Nizdaza, says the Rambam, don't worry about it. You don't have to worry about anything. Because you can assume that this hagosha that she's experiencing can be attributed to the urinating, not to the bleeding. The Rambam gives you a little bit of the medical part that we can assume that this blood is not really coming from the cheder. Cheder is the uterus. It's not really coming from the uterus. It's coming from a different part. It's coming from bladder, in fact, kidney, I'm going to leave out the urinary tract, I'm going to leave out all the medical terms. The bottom line, the Rambam says, you can safely assume this is not dam didus. Now again, we're going to come back to this sugya much later in terms of the intricacies of this halacha, but the only part of this Rambam that we're interested in right now are those four words, afilu hirgish gufa v'niz da'aza'a, because the Rambam just told us an important point. The Rambam just defined for us at least one aspect of hagosha is da'aza'a. She almost trembles, almost shakes a little bit. Some kind of a physical, something that takes over her body. That's the hargosha that the Rambam is referring to.
Do you know what those two organs the Rambam is quoting are?
The chelchules or the chulia. Well, chulia is a kidney. The chelchules, I don't remember whether that's the... Is that the bladder? I don't remember. The chelchules? I think maybe the bladder. I'm not sure. I can't say which one. I have to go back and learn those trephus to remember which is which. So... The Rambam just told us what Agosha is. It's Hirgish Gufa Vinizdaza. It's almost like a feeling that's permeating her entire body. Now, why is that critical for the Rambam? The Rambam just told us is where this Agosha is being experienced. If you would have asked me, I would have said, well, maybe Agosha is something that's associated with the place where the blood is leaving. Maybe there's some kind of a physical sensation in that part of the body. The Rambam didn't describe it that way. The Rambam describes some physical sensation on the body, on the gufa. She's shaking, she's trembling, something like that is happening. That's not the osa makom. So that's already something that's interesting to draw from the Rambam, that a hargosha doesn't necessarily have to be in that area where the blood is coming from. What are the potential ramifications of this Rambam? So there's a major machlekes haposkim, a very, very serious, potentially, ramification of this machlekes halacha lemaase today. The Shadows of Tshuva is the Maram Shik. Maram Shik was a Talmud of the Chassam Sofer. The way the story goes, I don't know whether it's true, but that the Maram Shik was a little boy, so he lived in Hungary, so it was a time when the Croatian governments were imposing last names on the Jewish communities. So some of the Rabbanim were very, very upset about that, because that was not really a Jewish thing. Your name was Yosef ben Shimon. Those things are the last name. So when they were going around and asking different families which the last name should be, so the way the legend goes, so the Maram Shik, his name wasn't Shik yet, his Moshe, that his name was, so his father asked him, little Meshula, what name should we take? As if the guy was making us take a name. So he said, Shem Yisrael Kudosh. He said, the Jewish name is holy. Shem Yisrael Kudosh. The Russian tape is for Shik. So that's how he got the name Maram Shik. I don't know whether it's true or not. You've got to check the history books. But this part I can tell you is true. And he had the following statement about this Rambam. Says the Maram Shik, it's the Talmud Chassam Sofer. We'll see later whether Chassam Sofer buys into this. It says the Maram Shik, he says that based on this Rambam, that Hargosha need not be the Eisim Machom, we would have the following application. We know, very, very common, that a woman, before she gets a period, will start to feel different types of uncomfortable physical ailments. She start with aches and pains, you start to get, you know, headaches, cramps, different kinds of things. Says the Rav Shit, that's it. That is Hirgish Gufa V'Nizdaza. So says the Rav Shit, any kind of premenstrual symptoms, they call them, and then she gets a period, that's a chashash of Hagrasha. And why is that important? Because that puts everything into a whole new light. That puts all kinds of re'eos, all kind of seeing of blood that's associated with any kind of premenstrual symptoms as an automatic Hagrasha, and that's going to put us right into the realm of the Araises under all circumstances. So many, many folks can disagree with the Maharam Sheik. Although, yes, it's true that the Rabbah does describe Nizdaza Gufa, Hagrishma Gufa Nizdaza, as not insisting on the sensation being related to Osa Mahom. Nevertheless, that's not exactly what the Rabbah is describing. The symptoms, the cramps, the things that the women speak about, are things that don't accompany literally the bleeding itself. Those kinds of feelings very often start actually before the actual bleeding starts. Well, they're not associated with the bleeding process. It's not that they'll get a cramp and then the blood comes. It's a little bit of a different, a little bit of a delayed reaction. And therefore, that's probably not what exactly the Rambam was referring to. Why would that be important? Because that would mean that even though there may have been a certain kind of a quote-unquote physical sensation, that doesn't necessarily qualify as a halachic hagrosha. Now, 9 out of 10 times, this discussion is going to be moot, because she's going to become an either deraisa for either there will be a real hagrosha or there will be some other substitute for hagrosha, but the shah does come up. There are situations, many scenarios that develop, that a woman gets a very, very, very small amount of blood, but that small amount of blood happens to be associated with a cramp. She's in the middle of a different type of a cycle. She's on medication. Half dozen million different things going on today. And she gets some kind of a quote-unquote cramping. And she gets a very, very, very small amount of blood. How do we look at that? Do we look at it through the eyes of their Isis or through the eyes of their Abonans? The differences between the two are going to be very, very significant. Their Isis are going to mean no coolers. Their Abonans are going to mean certain coolers. So whether or not the Baram Shik is accepted in Halacha can make all the difference in the world. It appears that most of the later posts didn't accept the Rambam Shit, for the reason that we said, that that's not the Hagosha that the Rambam was describing. Those premenstrual symptoms are not really associated with the bleeding process proper, and therefore they wouldn't qualify for the Rambam's first Hagosha. So we're going to move on now. What other kind of Hagosha can we discuss?
Is the Hagosha itself dealing for the blood, or that itself is...
That's like a multi-million-dollar... You got to come back for the next 5 weeks to see. That's like a brisket turn, Nagosha. Is Nagosha a Tanai? Is it a Machayev? Is it a Siva? Is it a Simon? We got a lot of work. A lot of work cut out for us. So we'll try another approach to Nagosha. Take a look at the third of the Mamre Kavos. The Shulchan Aruch is quoting the end of the statement in the third of the Mamre Kavos, is the quote out of the Tshumas Hadeshen. The Tshumas Hadeshen was borderline the Rishonim, it all depends on where historically you draw the line. But it was the very, very end of the period of the Rishonim, right before the time of the Shulchan Aruch and the Rafal. So Chuvash was a rav in Germany in the 1400s. So he wrote Kavaldik Chuvas. The reason why there was such great Chuvas is because he made up all the Shalas. Because he had a lot of Shtikul Torahs to write, and no one asked him such good Shalas. So maybe he asked some Shalas. So then he had these Kavaldik Chidush there. It said, Chuvash's words, in terms of the Messiah and Halacha Maisa, were very, very authoritative. They're quoted all the time in Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah as a major, major source of Psach Halacha. So Shulchan Aruch in the third of the Rambam Kamas quotes the following. Devar Torah said the Kutsari Sif Aleph, Devar Torah, Eina Isha Matama, Velo Asur Labaila. A woman is neither Tameya nor Asur to her husband, Achitagish Yetidam Bisara, until she experiences Hagosha. The Chacham Gazu, just as a jumping ahead, the Chacham made a Gezerah al Kesem Shinim Tabagufa Vigadeha. If she finds a stain, even without Hagosha, either on her body or on her clothing, she Tameya Vesur Labaila Fil Lohigisha. So in terms of Lamaisa, today, even without Hagosha, she's going to become a surah, but again, it's still critical to know whether we're dealing with a derais or a derabanan, because our whole outlook in Uchaz Nida is going to change radically in terms of passing shailas, whether we're in the realm of derais or realm of derabanan. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes right out of the Gemara, Hagosha is critical. And even, let's say a woman experienced a stain, and even though she checks herself internally and there's no blood there, so it was really a quirk, really it's a yitzim and a klal, it doesn't matter. It's a tzrich hafsiktara, it's really jumping ahead, but she needs to do a hafsiktara later on. She took out some tins of dairet in order to make sure she's Torah. Vechakach tim neshivinikiyim, then she has to count 7 clean days, chutzviyam mamitziyah, with the exception of the day that she found in itself, i.e., she's a regular need. The rice or the rabbana, it doesn't make a difference. Kilura savadis. Again, there's a jumping ahead of things we'll hopefully get to much, much later on. But now's the part that's relevant for us. This is the, up till now wasn't the chiddush, this is right out of the Gemara. The imhegisha, the third line of imhegisha, sheniftach mekoira lahotzidam. A woman all of a sudden gets a sensation that her mokor opened up. That literally, that statement literally means is that she feels somehow that her uterus opened. That's what it means. That she feels some kind of a sensation like that. And ubotka acharkach lo matzaklum. And she goes and she checks and finds nothing. It's an opinion that maintains that she's a surah anyway. Why? Because in response to Azriel's, this is my first response, I got many responses to go on this one. First response, Azriel asked me a question, what is this Hargosha story? Is this Hargosha a condition? Is this a proof that what the Chumas Adeshin, quote about Shacharach, just said is, a woman didn't even bleed. She has no blood. She didn't see any blood on herself, didn't see any blood on her clothing. She did an internal check, didn't find no blood. She's still Asura. Why? Because she experienced Hagosha. So up until now, we've been talking about Dam without Hagosha. This is Hagosha without Dam. And the Shulchan Aruch says, Yesh Mishami Shittimeh. We will hopefully come back to the Shulchan Aruch significantly down the line. So what did the Chumash Hadash and the Shulchan Aruch just tell us? Besides this Chiddush, that you can somehow become a Nidu without any blood, they just, almost coincidentally, defined for us what Hagosha is. They just told us, the Megisha Sheniftach Makaira, that she experienced the sensation of niftach makaira. Now notice the way the Shulchan Aruch is defining now Hargosha is radically different than the Rambam's Hargosha. The Rambam was focusing on some kind of a feeling that wasn't related to that organ of the body that is responsible for damnida. The Shulchan Aruch is quoting from the Tirmus Hadeshen that Hargosha is now limited. Hargosha is local, again, for the anesthesia, localized pain or general pain. So the Chumash Hadash and Shulchan Aruch are speaking about Hargosha of Niftach HaMakor. That is the Hargosha that the Halacha is recognizing. So we have two different versions of the Rishonim, just physically, what is this Hargosha? And the answer is not a stira. They're both right. They're both true. The Torah Shemapet doesn't say what Hargosha is. The Torah just says, Achitagish Rupsara. The Din Derai says, Achitagish Rupsara. So what's the difference whether you ask the Rambam for the Hargosha of general trembling, whatever that means, cramping or not cramping, depending on that machlokes, or whether Hargosha refers to some kind of a localized sensation in the area of the uterus itself. Both of them should l'chora qualify as Hargosha. So up until now, the two Hargoshas that we've been spending the last 20 minutes on are the two Hargoshas that are going to become the most difficult for us to actually pinpoint the halacha in terms of practically. Women today, the way it's described to us, do not have this kind of Hargisha Shniftach Makaira. We have no idea what this Hargosha Shniftach Makaira is really all about. So the Rambam's first Hargosha, we weren't exactly sure how to define it. The Chumash Hadash and Shulchan Aruch's second Hargosha, we have no idea what that corresponds to practically with Zman Hazeh. The Hargosha that takes up most of the discussion of the Poskim is the third Hargosha. That's the one that appears doesn't appear explicitly in the Rishonim. Many Achorim claim it appears directly in the Gemara. Well, you can judge for that if you want. There is what we call the third level of Hargosha. In order to discuss the third level of Hargosha, we're going to take a look at the fourth of the Rambam Kamas, and that's from the Chavas Das. The Chavas Das was the Baal HaNesivis. Besides writing the Nesivis on Chayshim Mishpat, he wrote the Chavas Das on Yeradei, wrote a few other things also. He wrote a famous Haggadah called the Maisa Nisim. Most people think that the reason why he called it Maisa Nisim because it has to do with the miracles. That's also true, but that's not why he called it Maisa Nisim. The reason why he called this famous Haggadah Maisa Nisim, if you look at the Haggadah, because there was a very wealthy Sephardi fellow whose name was Nisim, who sponsored the Haggadah. So he called it Maisa Nisim after him. So everybody, even the olden days, if you pay for it, you get the name of the book also. So the Baal HaNesivis, the Chavas Das, in his words in Yeradeya, so let's take a look at the second paragraph. The Da, says the Chavas Das, the Shlosha Minei Hargosha Hei. There were three kinds of Hargosha in Halacha. Echad, Kishemagasha, Shenizda, Zagufa. The one is but she feels some kind of a trembling, whatever that means. Rambam begins to reveal the design we just spoke about. Vizel Shono, Alpha Pisha Hergish Guf Min Izdaza. That was number one. Alma the Zimikri Hagosha, and then the Ayin B'Simen Kuf Beizayin B'Mashiach Shaf Mikol Zedivra Rashba. So then he says, take a look at what I wrote about that Hagosha days. Kishem Hagasha Sheniftach Mekira. When she feels the sensation of the uterus opening up, so that was the second one we quoted from the Tumas Hadeshet, as appears in Shulchan Aruch. But this is the key one. This is the one where a good chunk of what we're going to talk about now is going to focus about. Vashlishis nimtza b'shuta acharenu. He says, in the Rishonim, you don't find this explicit. Again, it may have its roots in the Gemara, but you don't find it actually defined in the Rishonim. Kishemargeshes shedav rach zav mimeno. When she feels something moist, some kind of a moisture literally coming out of her, flowing out of her, that's the third official Hagosha of the Halacha. So that's going to now take up our time to try to understand what the source for that is and what the parameters of that are. So comes the Chavos Das, and even though he was the first one to introduce this, so that he predated the Chavos Das, but he's the first one inside that we saw discussing Zivas Davilach, comes the Chavos Das and puts a significant brakes on it, and this is going to be a throwback to what we spoke about at the very, very beginning of the Sugya in terms of the different dinim all learned out from the same person. No. Says the Chavos Das, Nira would appear to me, the Ba'inan Shetargish Shezav Mimekoira. What does that mean? Let's pinpoint precisely. The woman comes and says, I experienced some kind of a feeling of a flow, some feeling of moisture, some kind of a zivas davalach, some liquidy, some moist, something flowing out of me. Flowing out of where exactly? Says the Chavos Das, out of the mochor. I mean, she has to say, she has to experience, she has to feel that the zivas davalach was exiting the mochor, was exiting the uterus. The imlohi gisha shezav v'mekorah. What if she doesn't feel it exiting the uterus? Raksha Mageshes Shazav Beprozdor. She feels it at a much later. Now, proz literally means like a hallway. She feels it at a later point. We're going to use terms now which may not be absolutely fine tuned halachically, but just for our purposes, we're going to use them. In contrast to her feeling the sensation of the moisture exiting the uterus, she feels it much further out. She feels it in the vaginal area. She feels it significantly further out, still in her body, but she feels it significantly further out. So nira, says the Chavos Das, shtita hayra. So that does not make her into a nida. So even though, if you think about it, she had a re'iyaz dam, no question she's bleeding, and she had a hagosha, aunt yaziva zavalach, she had both components together, and she still doesn't become a nida derai. So why? Since at the moment that it came from the mochor, from the uterus to the, I'm avoiding using the middle term called cervix because there's a major machlokes in the poskim whether that's halachically part of the uterus or that's out of the uterus. So we're just going to leave that out for now. So, but rather says the Chavos Das, if she experiences it at a later point, that since at the moment of truth when it left the mochor and prozdor, lower gisha. If she would stop and ask the shal at that moment, blood just came from the uterus, it's now in the vaginal area, and she has not yet experienced the hagosha. So if you would stop right now and ask, am I muteris or asura? The answer would be you're muteris. You didn't have hagosha. So, ask the Chavos Das, how is she going to become tamei later? So, the things are not simultaneous. Your Riyaz Dam happens now, and 2 seconds later the Hagosha happens. That's not Riyaz Dam Hagosha, says the Chavos Das. Shalom the Shavuot. So she had all the components. She had a Zivas Davalach, which the Chavos Das is accepting as an official formal Hagosha. And he's turning around and saying, it's a formal Hagosha, but it has to be very early on in the process. If the Hagosha happens after the Halachic Riyah, that's not considered to be Tumas Nidah. That's the Chiddush of the Chavos Das. So on the one hand, he accepts this third Hagosha that the Achronim are Mechadesh, that Zivas Davalach does qualify as Hagosha, but he puts significant brakes on it, that it has to happen fairly early on in the process. The Chavos Das is referring to those poskim who disagreed with him. He knew full well that there are others who disagreed with him, and the first and foremost poskim who disagreed with him was the Na'idi Behuda. The Na'idi Behuda, I didn't put the Na'idi Behuda in my premise, but the Na'idi Behuda the Chavetz Chaim is referring to, this is about Tlukta, and the Yehuda's opinion was that not only is Zivas Levelach constitute a Hagosha, but the Hagosha need not be at that early stage. It can even be at a later stage. How did the Nebbi Yehuda know that? So we have to go back to the first Gemara, go back to the first of the Sugyas. Remember, we started out by saying everything we've been talking about for the last 40 minutes revolves around one magic word. What was that word? Vivisara. That was the mark of Bibisara Achatagish Bibsara. That's the way the Rabbanu Shalom was transmitted to us. This Torah Shabbat, this Allah Mashini, this requirement of Hagosha, was transmitted to us through the word in Chumash, Bibisara, which translates in Torah Shabbat to mean Achatagish Bibsara. Now let's not forget, Bibisara meant something else also. Bibisara was the suas that she becomes a Nida, even though the blood is still physically inside her body. It hasn't. Not on a clothing, it's not out of a body, it's still inside a body. That's also called Bibsara, to make her a Nida. Which organ in the body, which area in the body is called Bibsara for the purposes of that halacha? We call the bias achitzam, the vaginal area. That's considered to be, for sure, the bias achitzam. So comes the Rebbe and says, well, make up your mind. What does the word Bibsara mean? Be a doctor, you have to be consistent. Pointed me to the organ that Bibsara refers to. Does Bibsara refer to the uterus? Does Bibsara refer to the vagina outside? Which part does Bibsara refer to? So vis-a-vis the halacha of when she becomes a Nida in terms of how far physically the blood has traveled, so the answer is not the uterus. She can have all the blood in the uterus, that's totally meaningless. A woman has a lot of blood inside the uterus. They look, take an ultrasound, they see there's loads of blood in the uterus. It hasn't left yet. So I don't know where it is. Kolzman, it hasn't gone. Machutz, she's still 100% over. What's called machutz? Machutz means outside the uterus. So you're telling me that the word Bifsara refers to, not to the uterus, it refers to the outside. It says in the Yehuda, well, the word Bifsara vis-a-vis location refers to outside, not literally outside the body, but the outer part of the inside of a body. Then the Hargasha can be experienced in that same organ as well. And therefore, says in the Yehuda, Azivas Devalach, inside the outside part, whatever you want to call it, is also called the Hargasha. So we have now a really almost four different types of Hargasha. We have the Hargasha of the Rambam, which the Rambam is describing these trembles, aches and pains and trembles, whatever they are, one of the Marashiks write, the other post write in terms of the physical application of Manazet. But we have the second Hargasha, the Trumas Adesha, that's called in Shulchan Aruch of Niftach HaMokor, which we couldn't quite put our fingers on biologically what exactly that translates to. Then we have the third Hargasha of Zivas Devalach, with the major machlekes, the Gedali HaPoskim, in terms of where is this Zivas Devalach? Is the Zivas Devalach very, very far inside, at the moment when it's exiting from the Bais HaPnimi to the Bais HaChitzam, it's leaving the universe, that's the Zivas Devalach? Or is the Zivas Devalach much, much further out? Zivas Devalach is, as long as it's in our body, but it's almost right about to come out, that also qualifies as Zivas Devalach. Suffice it to say, that question of a couple of, I don't know how much distance that is, not all that much, but the answer to that question will make all the difference in the world. Sometimes, discussing with the woman, was there Hagosha, was not Hagosha, sometimes she'll describe, well, she felt the sensation. She felt some moisture, she felt something, oozing, but a little bit of a feeling. So then you ask the next question, where was that feeling? Did you feel it very external? Was it almost otot as was coming out of the body? Or was it something much further in? Answer 9 out of 10 times will be that it's much further externally. The internal kinds of sensations are much rarer than the external types of sensations. And whether or not you go down the route of the Nevi Hud, you go down the route of the Chavaz Das, may make all the, it's a small nuance, a very, very small amount of geography, but it may make all the difference in the world. However, both of these Gedalia Poskim are assuming that Zivas Devalach is a valid Hagosha. They may be arguing about the nuances and the details, the very important details, but they both agreed that Zivas Devalach does qualify theoretically as a Deraisa Dika Hagosha. Now, as the Chavaz Das was Modat, Lo Nimtza Barishenim. The Rishonim don't have, the Rambam doesn't describe that. Jim Sadesh and Shulchan don't describe that. The Achronim were almost the first ones to discover, so to speak, this Zivas Devalach. Is it really true? Is it really such a thing? Does it even exist altogether? So one of the reasons that perhaps led the Achron de Aguda writes that leads us to believe that there is a Zivas Devalach, that concept exists, is the very point of that very first sugya. Remember that same word, Ribsara. What did Ribsara mean? Ribsara was used to teach us multiple dinim. It was used to teach us Hagasha, but it was also simultaneously used to teach us that you have to have a Yetziyim Rebaisa Chitza. So you see that the word Ribsara is talking about a certain part of the body. It's talking about that organ. That's what the Rebbe says. It's not talking about the Rambam's description of a woman getting a lekra. It's not talking about the woman shaking. It's not talking about headaches. It's not talking about cramps. It's talking about things. Ribsara. Ribsara doesn't mean her flesh in general, it doesn't mean her body. Ribsara means that organ, that part of the body. So says the Rebbe, almost the Iker Hagosha is not the Rambam's Hagosha. The Iker Hagosha is in that area that's called Ribsara. The Trumas Hadeshen, that's way early in it. That's too far in, says the Rebbe Yehuda. Bifsara means the Bayis Achitza. That's what the term Bifsara means. So says the Rebbe Yehuda, there's only one thing that the women tell us they experience in the Bayis Achitza. There's no pain, there's no ziyazua. The only thing that you have in the Bayis Achitza is Zivas Novalach. Says the Rebbe Yehuda, ain't the Chargosha, because all of himself. He says, the reason why the Rishon didn't bother describing it, it's so obvious. Of course that's Chargosha. That's like the ABCs of Chargosha. You could pilpels that Rama right, is it Trumas Hadeshen right? Are those additional Hagoshas? Maybe yeah, maybe no. But the Iker Hagosha Murba Torah says in Adhuda, of course that's what it's referring to. It's referring to Zivas Davalach, says in Adhuda. I happen to also hold that that refers to a further external Zivas Davalach. And you can argue and you can disagree with the Adhuda. So again, so we have three possible sources of Hagoshas. Some appear explicit in Rishonim, and the third, which is clearly the most common of the Hagoshas, doesn't appear in the Rishonim because it beats it. It appears in the Gemara, at least claims in the Yudah that's right out of the Gemara. It's just Dvarim Pshutim. Nobody had to bother explaining with us.
Do all the other Rishonim aside from the Rambam really discuss the Rishonim?
Not explicitly. No. They just talk about the Rishonim. The Rishonim talks a little bit. The Rishonim, the Gemara talks about it, but they don't absolutely define it.
I mean, do they all say that you need to have
I'm saying the Gemara, there's
Machlokas.
No, not really Machlokas. The Gemara has different questions on it, but the Pashas in the Gemara said there's no Machlokas. One Rishon claimed there's a Machlokas in the Gemara about it, but the Pashas in the Gemara said there's no even Machlokas about it. So the Nebuta would respond, the reason why nobody bothered to define it, because it was so obvious, he just asked the wives. The wife said, well, that's what we feel. We feel as if it's not a law. So the Nebuta said, well, you have to define it, everybody. Every woman knows what it is. That's exactly what it is.
Since Chavis Nas is talking about furthering, so how do we know that the Trumas Hadeshen that wasn't what he used before?
Well, he doesn't use the word Zivas Davalach. He's Niftach, but he does use the word Niftach Makaira. Niftach Makaira is not exactly Zivas Davalach. So, hopefully we'll see. So, again, we'll mention next week. We'll take this point, but suffice it to say, up until now, we've seen everybody agreeing that this exists, Zivas Davalach. We're just arguing the details and the nuances of the sources. Hopefully next week we'll come to the other side of the story. There may be some who actually question whether this thing even exists. Maybe the reason why nobody mentioned it is not because it was obvious. Nobody mentioned it because it wasn't true. So hopefully next week we'll... Okay. Okay.